and to provide a 20-foot wide easement on the north and west sides of the property to allow for the potential future development of these trails, which are in line with our proposed trails and greenways map. C is whether or not the changes that needed to allow reasonable development of the site. The proposed amendment from the agricultural conservation area to the rural residential area is necessary to allow a residential development on the site. The proposed conditions, however, of the amendment will more clearly locate and identify the natural resources on the site and provide opportunity for the preservation and maintenance of these environmentally sensitive areas. D is the relationship of the proposed amendment to the supply and demand for particular land uses within Story County and the immediate vicinity of the site. There's a demand for rural residential dwellings and recreation in Story County. There's a growing population, and thus additional housing options will be needed. This will provide an option for home buyers looking for smaller lot sizes, but also open recreation space. The proposed conditions will assist in preserving the the environmentally sensitive areas. And there's a proposed condition requiring a 50-foot buffer between the proposed development lots and the agricultural use directly to the east, which will assist in meeting Land Use Goal 8, ensuring gradual land use transitions to reduce potential incompatibilities of the proposed uses. E is to demonstrate that the proposed amendment has merit beyond the interests of the applicant. Of course, the map amendment from the agricultural conservation area to the rural residential would serve the interests of the applicant by allowing residential lots to be platted and sold for single-family dwelling construction. But this would also provide additional opportunities for housing in Story County. With the proposed conditions of the rezoning, identifying the environmentally sensitive areas on the site, designating these areas as agricultural conservation area and natural resource area, and collaborating with Story County Conservation to determine the best method for preserving these areas, allow current and future residents of Story County to benefit. The preservation of the environmentally sensitive areas another benefit of the preservation of the environmentally sensitive areas would be maintaining open space and providing a buffer between the proposed development and the existing land uses. This open space will also provide for improved stormwater management and erosion control, and those things will further minimize the impacts of the proposed development on adjacent land uses. This preservation will also foster habitat, creating room for growth of the existing remnant prairie species. And the proposed amendment will further provide an opportunity to learn about conservation design development within the rural areas of Story County and act as a resource for future developments of this type. F is the possible impacts of the amendment on all specific elements of the comprehensive plan, including but not limited to. I'll just pull out a couple that I provided comments on. Conservation of natural resources and recreation, the proposed amendment, meeting the conditions proposed for approval, will further the natural resource and recreation goals through the preservation of environmentally sensitive areas and by providing an opportunity for future expansion of recreation features in Story County. And then land use, the proposed amendment meeting the proposed conditions would amend the future land use map natural resource area layer to provide a more accurate understanding, a more accurate representation of the what is on the site. So in terms of transportation, then, the impact on transportation, this is a major subdivision, so with the recently approved traffic impact analysis and study ordinance, the applicant will be required to submit an analysis as part of the major subdivision application to better understand the potential impacts of the development. Story County planning and development staff and conservation staff are also recommending, again, the condition of a 20-foot wide easement along the west and north edges of the proposed development for potential future development of a hard surface trail connecting the residential area with the city of Gilbert and the natural resources area in the southwestern quarter. And finally, consideration of the fiscal impact of the proposed amendment to Story County. Any potential fiscal impacts would be determined at the time of the submittal of the major subdivision plat application. We did hold, Story County departments held a conceptual review meeting on October 11th. The assessor's office indicated that building lots are assessed under the Iowa platting law. That means vacant lots are valued at a minimal agricultural value for 5 years or until built upon. After that 5-year period, the vacant lots will be assessed at market value. The auditor's office primarily noted about the boundaries of the three drainage districts and the implication that would have. Story County Conservation, just some highlights. There are natural resources on this area. There was a preliminary plant survey done. 22 species of native prairie plants that do exist on the site. The Conservation Board is going to continue to gather information, data on the natural resources of the property, and look forward to working with the applicant to explore the potential of environmentally sensitive residential development. Story County Engineer noted our requirement of 500 feet of site distance between driveways. The drainage would need to be maintained within each of those drainage district boundaries. A note of the district tile that's located. The engineer anticipates approximately 700 vehicles per day to 170th Street if the proposed development was built out. But these traffic impacts and access locations would be specifically addressed when the subdivision plat is submitted. Story County Environmental Health discussed at conceptual review with the applicant the possibility of a group wastewater treatment. However, it's sounding like the on-site systems are likely the way to go, although that won't be determined until the subdivision plat is submitted. We did send notice letters to property owners within a quarter mile of the proposed rezoning and to the city of Gilbert regarding this public hearing, and then also the Board of Supervisors meeting on December 11th. We also published a notice of the proposed rezoning in the three papers designated by the Board of Supervisors, and that was on November 27th that ran. We did receive a few phone calls just asking for additional information. People had seen the sign that we placed on the property. A Planning and Zoning Commission member, as previously disclosed, was contacted by the mayor of Gilbert to discuss the proposed project. A commission member, the same commission member, also forwarded comments and questions from an adjacent property owner, including questions about the drainage district boundaries, the tile preservation, keeping the natural flow of water, especially the floodplain portion, the applicability of the Greenbelt Conservation District, and the residential conservation design overlay district, This property owner noted that further studies of the environmentally sensitive areas should be completed, and then questioned whether or not placing 80 homes on a small area is consistent with Principle 1 of the Rural Residential Area, which is to ensure that new development is sensitive to the predominantly rural nature of the area. So, points to consider when looking at this application request for the rezoning and the C2C map amendment. An on-site plant survey found the presence of native prairie remnants and other natural resources on certain areas of the subject property. The Story County C2C comprehensive plan prioritizes preservation of natural resources, including native prairie remnants, and discourages development in these areas. Principle 3 of the natural resource designation in the C2C plan does propose the Greenbelt Conservation Zoning District as an appropriate method for preserving natural areas. The applicant, Story County Conservation, and Planning and Development staff agree that having the Story County Conservation Board and the applicant enter into a management or ownership agreement would be the most effective way to preserve and maintain the native prairie species and other environmentally sensitive areas on the subject property, as opposed to, again, placing the responsibility on future residents or future homeowners association. The subject property is located 1.5 miles west of the city of Gilbert and is adjacent to two paved county roads, which is 170th Street and 500th Avenue again. Since the development is discouraged within the floodplain, it can be determined that the subject property is surrounding to the existing development at Eagle Ridge. And this existing character the surrounding character is primarily agriculture and large lot residential. There are those subdivisions located to the north and to the south, and so using that, the Eagle Ridge subdivision is surrounding the subject property. Staff recommends allowing an overall density of 14 dwellings per quarter, as that would be consistent with the Eagle Ridge subdivision to the south. This is more dense than the Buck Hills Estate subdivision to the north in Boone County. A rezoning to the R1 Transitional Residential District rather than the AR Agricultural Residential District would allow for smaller lot sizes, offering a greater possibility of protecting the environmentally sensitive areas and open space areas on the subject property. At the time the application for this major subdivision is submitted, a traffic impact analysis will be required for the proposed development. Any road or traffic improvements of the proposed development would be considered at that time. And finally, the C2C plan does include the proposed trails and greenways map, which includes a proposed hard surface trail along 500th Avenue and 170th Street. So, Story County Planning and Development staff support the proposed rezoning from the A1 Agricultural District to the R1 Transitional Residential District and the C2C Future Land Use Map designation from the Agricultural Conservation Area and the Rural Residential Area for the Northwest Quarter, the Northeast Quarter, and the Southeast Quarter of the subject property with the following conditions. The overall density of the future subdivision be consistent with the density at Eagle Ridge subdivision located to the south, which is not to exceed 14 development lots per quarter in order to match the existing character of the area. The second is the applicant shall collaborate with Story County Conservation to identify and map the locations of environmentally sensitive areas including the southwest of the northwest quarter, on the subject property, including but not limited to those resources identified in the Residential Conservation District Overlay District, as we discussed, and that are listed in Condition 7 below. The applicant shall request a future land use map designation amendment for the environmentally sensitive areas identified in that further study in collaboration with conservation, from the requested rural residential designation to the agricultural conservation designation at the time the proposed subdivision plat and rezoning submittal. The environmentally sensitive areas identified in Condition 2 shall be further designated as natural resource area on the C2C future land use map. Condition 4, in order to ensure the long-term protection of the environmentally sensitive areas and the floodplain areas, application to rezone the southwest quarter, and all the environmentally sensitive areas identified in the further study from the A1 Agriculture District and the R1 Transitional Residential District to the Greenbelt Conservation District shall be submitted at the time of the proposed subdivision plat. A management and or ownership agreement with Story County Conservation shall be made and submitted at the time of the rezoning in order to best preserve and maintain the identified environmentally sensitive areas on the property. 5, the existing character of the area surrounding the subject property is primarily agricultural parcels and large lot residential. Let's see here. So I apologize. Looking at the overall density of the Eagle Ridge subdivision to the south, the density should not be greater than 14 dwellings per quarter. Let's see, I apologize here. 7, this is the... at the time of the application for a major subdivision, the traffic impact analysis... Let's see, I apologize here. Yeah, I did. This is the recommendation condition. Okay. A rezoning to the R1 Transitional Residential District rather than the AR Agricultural District will allow for smaller lot sizes, offering greater possibility of protecting the environmentally sensitive areas and the open space areas. I apologize. Bear with me here. Let's see, we discussed condition number 4. In accordance with principle 4 of the rural residential area, the C2C future land use map designation, a buffer of no less than 50 feet shall be maintained between the proposed subdivision development lots and the agricultural land use located to the east. A 20-foot wide easement for future hard surface trail shall be provided on the north and west sides of the proposed subdivision for future trail development, as described in the C2C plan. And as a part of the subdivision plat submittal, the development improvements shall meet the requirements of the RC Residential Conservation Design Overlay District, which includes designation of areas not for development for wetlands and hydric soils, native prairie remnants, significant trees and cover, slopes greater than 14%, burial sites and Native American mounds, habitat for endangered species, and then drainage ways that contain running water shall have a 30-foot buffer. And I apologize for that mistake. The Planning and Zoning Commission, after we discussed, may consider the following alternatives. One is approval as submitted. Two is Approval as submitted with conditions. 3 is denial as submitted. 4 is remanding the request to come back to you into your January meeting. And then 5 is recommended by staff, which is that the Story County Planning and Development, the Planning and Zoning Commission, recommend approval of the proposed rezoning and the C2C future land use amendment for the northwest, the northeast, and the southeast quarters of Section 7 of Franklin Township with the conditions listed above. With that, would you like me to summarize the conditions one more time?
Are they the same as in the report you sent us that's on the agenda center?
Yes.
No. Clear on the conditions? Adequately? No. Are there any questions for the staff?
I have some questions.
Okay.
What I'm hearing is you're recommending the rezoning to the AR?
R1.
Pardon me. The R1. For 3 of the 4 quarter quarters. When I look at the map that Dr. Rosberg did, those 3 quarters would include the prairie remnants, unless I'm looking at it wrong. Is that correct, John?
Yeah, so some of the prairie remnants are located in those quarter quarters. Let's see.
It would, just from the dimensions, it would look like all of them are.
Okay. So those are the steepest, they're the slopes facing south and west on the subject property. Let me just get back to this map here. Here we go. So these are what have been identified. Mm-hmm. With the conditions of approval, we're asking the applicant to work with Story County Conservation to further identify any remnant prairie species, any other environmentally sensitive areas, naturally occurring resources on the site, and then rezone those as greenbelt conservation. So the area that would be rezoned, and one of the reasons we can't do it now is we don't know exactly where those areas are located, would include the steepest slope areas on the subject property.
Which makes sense if this is used as pasture land, cattle are going to graze and they're not going to graze on the steepest slopes. So.
Right. So in the end, with our conditions, they would provide a more detailed location of where the environmentally sensitive resources are located. It would be zoned Green Belt Conservation District. There would be a natural resource overlay on the C2C future land use map. And then that area would be a part of an agreement, whether that's management or ownership, between the applicant and Story County Conservation to maintain those areas.
So has the applicant agreed to that?
There was interest. There was a discussion at conceptual review and also in the application materials of an agreement.
So those slopes would then come to conservation? It would become part of the land that's managed by conservation or owned by conservation or owned by the county?
Correct.
Okay, so there was discussion of that?
Yes.
Okay, does discussion mean agreement?
No agreement, just discussion.
Okay, thank you. Second question I would have is you're talking about a 50-foot buffer to the east, 20-foot easement to the north, and a 20-foot easement to the west. Mm-hmm. How many acres does that take out of the land that would be developed?
The trails would be, if possible adjacent to the right-of-way, so it would just be a 20-foot along this side, which isn't going to be developed anyway because that's in the floodplain.
Okay. There's 20 on the north.
20 on the north, which in the concept drawing, the applicant is proposing a buffer there from the right-of-way anyway.
Okay.
And then the concept drawing also shows the 50-foot buffer on the eastern edge.
Okay. And the reason I'm asking that is I'm just confused about the math. Okay? Eagle Ridge is 40 acres, right? Which is a quarter.
Right.
14 lots. Here you're talking three quarters less some significant pieces of land, mm-hmm. and you're talking 56 lots. That math doesn't compute for me. I don't understand.
They're
that.
Smaller lots.
They're smaller lots.
Right.
Yeah, we're
I
looking
thought they were going to be the same size as Eagle Ridge.
It's no 20. In the R1 district, it's a 25,000 square foot minimum lot size.
Okay. I got lost between the AR and the R1 then. So we're talking smaller lots.
Plus 1 acre minimum versus 25,000.
Right. So we'd be allowing smaller lot sizes,
mm-hmm.
But at the density of dwellings per quarter as the same density as Eagle Ridge. In terms
because
of
you'd be including all those other areas that aren't being built on and aren't being aren't residential
yeah,
lots.
The trade-off is preservation of environmentally okay. sensitive areas.
Correct.
I see. You said 500 feet between driveways. Is that allowed on this?
500 feet visibility.
It's a 500-foot visibility requirement. Mm-hmm. Again, that would...
There's a hill there.
There's a hill there. That would be determined with the engineer at the time of the subdivision.
Okay.
Middle.
You said there would be special considerations because there's three drainage districts. What does that mean, special difficulties or considerations? What do you see as the impacts because this land is in three drainage districts?
Part of the, I guess, the rules of drainage districts are that all drainage must stay within the district.
Mm-hmm.
If you're proposing development that crosses into several drainage districts, the way the water drains has to be carefully considered in terms of staying within each of those boundaries.
You can't materially affect the existing drainage. So you can't grade this in such a way that now all the water drains into one drainage district.
So that in fact is my point, is there's going to be some grading done for construction.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So whatever grading is done for construction will have to be monitored by somebody to ensure that? How does that work?
Well, and again, this is the detail that would be made at the time of the actual subdivision plat submittal and reviewed by all the county departments, including the representative for the drainage districts and the county engineer.
This is just a request for zoning, right?
Correct.
Right.
So that it's
the issues will come up, though.
Right, but the plat map is just to give us an idea of what's being proposed. Does not match what the recommendation is and
right.
doesn't take into account any of the engineering that's required. Well, it may, but not based on some of this.
Correct.
Okay.
The descriptive name of the R1 district is the Transitional Rural Residential District?
The Transitional Residential District.
Transitional Residential. Now, the paragraph you put up, or that was in the staff report about the intent of that district, doesn't elaborate on what transitional is supposed to mean. Is there more in the zoning code about that word, or is that just a word attached to the description of that?
That is a word attached to the and the description. Providing a density between rural and urban density.
So you would not necessarily interpret that to mean geographically a transition from rural to urban?
No, I would interpret that to mean in terms of density. Yeah, not location, but rather density.
The size is in between. The size of the lots is in between, not correct. Intended to transition from urban, suburban size lots gradually to agricultural or large rural lots.
That would make a lot of sense to me. The transition is usually from going from a greater something to a lesser something, and you're in the middle. So I don't understand. I don't understand use of that word there and the way you're describing it. I take it as Aaron first said it. But
I just wanted to know the insight or history on how that's been sort of interpreted in the past.
Yeah.
And then another question I have is, what are the plan designations between this property and, say, Gilbert to Highway 69 and down to Cameron School Road? What's the makeup of the various plan designations?
Majority of that is located within the Ames Urban Fringe. So we haven't designated that in terms of the C2C plan because the Ames Urban Fringe is encompassed in the C2C plan. Does that make sense?
Not along County Line Road, though.
No.
Outside the Fringe plan.
Yeah, this is outside. Yep, but
and County Line Road, where does County Line Road intersect with the Fringe?
North of Cameron School Road.
Somewhere between Eagle Ridge and Cameron School.
Yeah, yes. I believe Eagle Ridge is outside of it. Yep.
Instead of further than that, because I'm outside of the urban fringe. Okay. I'm closer to it.
Just to clarify,
it's clearly outside of the Ames Urban Fringe plan, this entire property.
You described the project area as being a quarter mile from Eagle Ridge in terms of surrounding land uses, but we're dealing with 160 acres here, so it's a pretty large scale thing. So the fact that the southwestmost corner is a quarter mile from Eagle Ridge is not really descriptive of. Fully descriptive of the land, surrounding land use environment there. There's a lot of ag land around this.
Right. We're primarily focusing on the floodplain, which is pretty significant, and wanted to pull that up.
Yeah, the floodplain is not going to have residential development on it. So you're really talking about the residential development being quite a bit further from Eagle Ridge.
Right. The southwest quarter would not be developed, but would be a part of the subdivision because they intend to use that for addressing some of the stormwater erosion control needs and recreational needs. But that really, for us, for staff, that was a big thing for us to get our minds on as to whether or not this subject property was in, surrounding to Eagle Ridge, which is to the south. And if you look at the floodplain, which is very extensive, it serves and acts as a corridor by which we don't encourage or support development in. And so just on the south side of that corridor is the Eagle Ridge subdivision. And so
There's another property there. There's the other larger residential property, and then there's Eagle Ridge.
A quarter. It's a single-family dwelling, but most of that is within the floodplain. A very small portion of that quarter is outside the floodplain.
Would it be possible, or have you attempted to project what the lease scores of neighboring properties would be if this is developed at the level proposed? Because the surrounding landlord use is, it's got legs, right?
So
when the land use up there becomes relatively high density residential,
right,
it's going to impact the lease scores of the properties across 170 to the north and the properties to the east towards Gilbert.
Correct.
Is there any way to project what those lease scores would do?
They would allow for rezonings of the adjacent land.
it's likely it would drop the LISA score.
Absolutely. Yep, the LISA score.
266.
Correct.
Right. And a good example, Aaron, is just the subject property itself. By if the three corridors get changed, then the Southwest corridor would be a candidate because the number would drop below that threshold, so they can submit the rezoning petition for that Southwest corridor.
But again, the LISA score is used as a to inform, right? And above the score, it is
it's written as an absolute above the score.
Okay. Yeah, 267.
So as it cannot be rezoned.
As we do the development, then it's
There's still if it's below the score, there's still judgment as to whether it's any rezoned.
Right, and the goal is to preserve prime farmland.
Right. And this is predominantly, if we're looking at all four corridors, you're looking at part of one corridor that's really row crops. The rest of it's hay or pasture.
Right. Hay to the northeast. There's some row crops to the southeast. Very steep slopes, and then floodplain.
Yeah.
It is being used for grazing cattle.
The average site value of those, the northwestern, northeastern, and southeastern quarters are fairly low, and again, that's the average of the corn suitability rating of the soil on the property. So those are fairly low, and that's what brought the LISA score down.
Mm-hmm. Well, the northeast is actually just it's one point, right?
Yes.
If LISA score is 267, and that came in at 266.
Correct. Yeah, correct.
Maybe Amelia didn't have a copy
which allows it. To have a rezoning request made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really?
Right. And if, you know, Amelia had her copy that day, maybe it would have gotten 267.
We looked at it quite extensively.
Right.
Other questions for the staff?
It's quite an extensive report. Thank you.
Would the applicant or the applicant's representative like to address the commission? Please step up to the podium and give us your name and business address for the record, please.
Sure. I can go to the. Yeah. I'll go to the ones that you provided.
At the end.
Yes. Sorry. Oops. There you go. And then your other submitted plants are.
There you go. So Stephanie, would you mind shutting off the light? Turn the light off. That might help a little bit.
I think.
Yes. Is it on? Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Kurt Friedrich with Friedrich Real Estate, and I am the applicant, and I am also here on behalf of my partner, Rich Johansson of Tasteful Homes, and Rich and I are proposing this new subdivision together. We've been working together for a number of years, a number of successful projects. Our company, Friedrich, has been doing business in the county for 90 years now, and we have the privilege of enriching lives through providing housing solutions and developing great subdivisions, and are pleased to continue to do that. And Rich builds some of the finest homes in Story County and has been doing that for decades. So we've got a good team put together, and Fox Engineering is our lead engineer on the project, and actually Scott has had a lot of history with this property. He's done some work on the drainage ways on this property dating back into the 80s, so he's very familiar with this property. Also want to thank Jerry and Emily for their thorough report, and I want to first just acknowledge just looking at it on paper, when you look at the comprehensive plan, one might think, gosh, we shouldn't see development here. because the current comprehensive plan shows it as agriculture and conservation area, natural resource area. But we knew when we started looking at the property that, and you all know as well, that sometimes these plans are drawn with a bit of a broad brush and aren't specifically accurate in some cases. And we thought that to be the case here. And our due diligence has proven that to be true in this case. There are some important resources on the site that are worthy of preservation, and some, and Dr. Rosberg in his report defined them as degraded prairie remnants that would be worthy of potential restoration. Finding those points in Dr. Rosberg's report was a guiding principle for us in how we designed, and that's frankly, we're not approving this tonight, but we thought, and this is a little atypical this early in the process, typically we would just be talking about comprehensive plan change and rezoning. But because of the uniqueness of this property, we felt it important to accelerate the development of the concept plan to something that would be very similar to what we would want to create here for a lot of the reasons that we're talking about, because this property is truly unique. And I think at the end of the day, what it affords us a really unique opportunity to provide first-rate housing for the people of Story County alongside achieving an important goal of conserving important resources, drainage ways, through implementing a lot of green space and potentially park space within the project. A little bit on the relationship that we have with Mr. Dotson. So Bob Dotson is the patriarch of the Dotson family. His family name is the namesake for Dotson Drive in Ames. And Bob and I became acquainted as he and his family owned some lots in Ames along Lincoln Way between Colorado and Wilmoth. And we're working together to help them market and sell those properties. And as we developed our relationship, became aware that their family owned this property as well. And frankly, Bob would have loved to be here tonight, but he's an attorney up in Algona, and he will be here for the supervisors meeting next week. But it was one of Bob's dreams, frankly, to see residential development happen on this site. For those of you that have been by the site, it's really a unique property that offers a lot of terrain, rolling property, fantastic potential for home sites. There also are many unique land features in terms of drainage ways that we have preserved in this design that has been put together, and also the remnants of prairie that were noted in Dr. Rosper's report are preserved in this design. Again, they're primarily located in those steeper sloped areas, and we have stayed off of those areas with the proposed development. In fact, we are setting aside, this is the lowest density project that we have ever done as a company, ever. We're setting aside better than 50% of the land. In fact, 90 of the 160 acres we are setting aside in perpetuity in either outlots or conservation space, park space. And Commissioner Merkin had noted or asked have we made any official agreements about the land? We have not, because this, none of this is official. But I will say there is a willingness on our part to potentially gift some of this land to the county to be used as conservation space and potentially a county park that would not only be for the benefit of the folks that would live here, but for all of Story County. Again, I think just a really unique opportunity to provide some great home sites and meet conservation goals. We have from day one been working alongside Mike Cox with conservation, and Mike reached out to Dr. Rosberg and arranged the site visit. I was present for that. Rich was present for that. Fox was present for that. We walked the site together back in early October and took this natural resources inventory in order to delineate where potential resources might exist. So that was part of our due diligence, which we have done. We designed around those resources that were identified, and we leave undisturbed those natural resources and can now work towards restoration. As noted, much of the ground is just poor for farmland. It's been used as grazing land for decades. And it's also several of the parcels, the three parcels, received the low LISA score ratings. The one parcel that had a higher rating was the southwest quarter, which we won't be developing. It's in the floodplain. I appreciate all the time that you've given tonight for consideration of our request, and there will be a few closing remarks I'd like to make, but in essence, we are in full agreement with the recommendation of staff, and we will go along with the rezoning to Greenbelt of the southwest quarter, and that could be extended a little further to include some of the prairie remnants that have been identified. We agree with that. We agree with all of the conditions that were noted, including the easements for potential bike path, pedestrian paths on the west and on the north, to creating a 50-foot buffer strip on the east side to the south. Frankly, I've done a lot of outreach. I've talked to Gilbert Fire to get feedback. Talked to board members of Gilbert Fire, Cindy Worth and Tom Hackett, and both are very excited about our project. I talked with Doug Moore with Franklin Township trustees, very excited about our project. Spoke to Mary Greeley. Typically, they don't respond to requests that go out from the county, but I do have a contact there at Mary Greeley that we will try to glean from them any feedback that they have related to providing emergency services to the project. Talked to John Nelson with the Gilbert School District School Board. Very excited about our project. The one point that we can't live with, that we need, that we just think is not reasonable, and to Aaron's point, we're different than Eagle Ridge. We want to be different from Eagle Ridge. We have clustered our lots in areas in order to preserve the natural resources on the project. But we need the lot count. If we're to take 24 lives out of our equation. We're essentially limiting at least 25% of our, almost 30% of our project. We can't do that. And one of the fundamental principles of what we're trying to achieve here is, frankly, while I think Eagle Ridge is a beautiful subdivision, and it's great for the people that live there, we want to create a subdivision that appeals more to the masses of Story County and is reachable in terms of affordability for people within Story County. And so we're not talking at Eagle Ridge, for example, the average price of the home is $850,000 and up. The average assessed value for the lots is approximately $200,000 per lot. This is not what we're creating here. We want to create a nice size community here of a range of homes. Now, there will be some homes, granted, that will be of a higher price variety. But we want to provide a wide range of price range and affordability for our clients. I think we can achieve a large number of homes, probably priced between $300,000 to $500,000, which would be wonderful for Story County. That's where the masses are in new construction. And we can do that here. Cameron Estates is about to an end. We've been developing in Cameron Estates here over the last 4 years. It's a 52-lot subdivision. We've gone through approximately 12 to 15 lots a year there at Cameron. We only have 8 lots left. This, we think, will be a great new area to open up as we're transitioning out of Cameron. And there are very few, if any, new opportunities in the county for housing like this. It's really a perfect property, a perfect site for this to happen. We already have the precedence of residential in that area, both AR as well as R1. It's really similar to what's happening along Cameron School Road, where this is essentially another Squaw Valley. And then you've got Squaw Valley alongside other subdivisions like Cameron Pines and Hickory Hills and our Cameron Estates. That's what's happening here. And it's great. We need it. So, those are my comments. I would agree and support the recommendation. And I would just ask for your consideration of removing that one stipulation of lot count. But everything else, we are in agreement with. I think Scott Renault, our engineer, may have some points he'd like to make as well. But thank you.
In your packet, Scott Renault, Fox Engineering. In your packet, you were provided kind of the plan set that we put together. And so I kind of just want to walk through that a little bit, if you can.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of show you how we came to this. Because there's lots of options on this property that are allowed by current zoning, and we wouldn't have to change the zoning. We could subdivide, create 5 to 35 acre lots, have 6 to 8 lots without doing anything. There's also a LISA exception which allows us to get down to 1 acre lots under A1. We could do that and not do anything. Most people will rezone to AR in order to make that work a little bit better, and I think there's more protection when you go to AR. But we've tried to do this in a way that accomplished lots of goals, including all the goals of the CGC's plan. And so we provided that text, and really when we went through that, all of those goals, we're meeting those goals. There's nothing in there where it's contrary to the goals of the CGC plan. using the R1 transitional allows us to do things that are more sensitive to the ground and more appropriate to the ground than to use it straight AR zoning or to do something different. So that's why we chose that. So we went a different route, and I'll tell you how we got there a little bit more as we go through the plan set. But we didn't use the resource conservation district zone because it has some anomalies that are really kind of hard to understand and really probably not appropriate. So the R1 transitional zone is one that gave us a little bit more flexibility. So this is the general neighborhood, and Emily has gone through that. And you can see at the very bottom corner of the Eagle Ridge, which she's using as the example, and that's where we're getting the density requirement from staff. I'm going to go to the next sheet. So this is the soils types for the property, and we always look at this right away on a property because we have hydric soils, wetland soils, and whatnot that show up that typically prevent development. In this case, this parcel, as a general rule, has all really nice soils for basically to meet the septic system requirements. You asked the question about grading. We typically, on these subdivisions, do not like to grade very much because of septic systems and their requirements and the discharge fields. We're grading very little. And so when we do a plan, we do it in a way that we're really trying to grade as little as possible. And we also try to avoid hydric soils, wetlands, and all that straight up. So that was all fairly good news. And then the hatched area is, of course, floodplain. It's a non-designated floodplain. By that, I mean there's a floodway and a flood fringe. That's included together, and it doesn't differentiate between the two. But it doesn't mean that we can't do some things to preserve that. I'm going to go to the next slide. So this is the general topography. Those are one-foot contours, and so we've got a lot of elevation across the site where what's been farmed is the flatter portions of the property. The pasture is very steep. And again, the floodplain, go to the next slide. This is, our program allows us to designate areas that are 14% and steeper and pull those out and color those. And so that's what this shows. So what you see is, and so these somewhat mimic what Dr. Rosberg came up with as far as slopes. So these are 14% and steeper. You have to be a little bit careful with it because it does bounce like terraces. For some reason in the one south quarter, they constructed terraces at some point. It's not even apparent that they ever farmed it, but they did construct terraces, so we end up with a kind of an anomaly in that area there where I really wouldn't think we'd have too many steep slopes. But this allowed us, so we take all these factors together and we try to figure out, you know, what are the areas we can develop and how can we be sensitive to that. Again, we're not going to grade sensitive soils. We're staying away from steep slopes, which also have most of the natural resources. We're going to stay out of the floodplain. So that leads us then to the next slide, which is should be, and again, this is kind of where we came up with the areas, if you want to know that. Next slide. Can you go back? Do we have the development piece? You pulled that out.
There we go. Yep.
So what we did is then what we have left is the areas we developed. And so really what we have here, the roads are built on the ridge tops, and the houses are built off to the sides. It's really a very simple layout. And so we're on the ridges, we're up high, we have good views, and then we leave the rest of it as natural resource area. We already have the 50-foot buffer. We already have the 20-foot buffers around. That's all included. So everything that the staff has asked for, with the exception of the lot numbers, is different. So this development here is 81 lots. This is concept E out of, we started with concept A. E will probably be at Z before we get done here, but at the end of the day, as we refine things and make it better. But these on average are 0.64 acres lot. So we have a minimum of 25,000 square feet. We go up to a few lots, like lot 33 on the end of the one cul-de-sac. Those tend to be larger, are going to be right at an acre. So we did an analysis of, if you want to go to that slide with Eagle Ridge, we did an analysis of Eagle Ridge Yeah, you stop there. So you can go back to that one. So you can kind of see that those are nominal one-acre lots. So the way they did their conservation area, which was not exactly required, they just didn't develop it, is that's surrounded in blue. And that is about 17, 18 acres. And then the development south is 20 acres. But the way I figure it is, it's about 50% green space and 50% development. And as Kurt indicated, we have a much higher ratio of that. We have 56% green space. We have 90 acres of open space the way we're showing it. We're just developing the lots more intensely. Go back to the previous table. And so we pulled that data out. Those lots average 1.47 acres, so they're well over double our size. And the houses, because of the way of the builder and how they approached it, you know, you have a range that's average is $852,000. The top value is $1.5 million, and the low value is $500,000. And so we're trying to actually hit a different market for that, so that's why we have the smaller lots. Let's see, what else did I provide you, Emily? I can't remember. Is that the last one?
That's the last one.
All right. So again, that's why we believe that it's appropriate for the smaller lots. Again, we're being sensitive to everything that we're doing here. With that, I guess I'll just stop and see if there's any questions.
Why include the Southwest 40 in the rezoning or any of the development action?
That's a good question. So the Southwest 40 is the one that has the high LISA score and then in the floodplain, right? So we look at this as an entire whole. It's not just pulling out the pieces. We could have easily probably have said just left off that piece and done away with it. The C2C plan, one thing I don't like about it is, and you discussed it a little bit tonight, is it doesn't coordinate real well with watershed management. And so there's some watershed features that can be enhanced by using that piece. And there's a Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority that's been in force for a couple of years. They're working through things. But it gives us an opportunity to meet some of the goals of that plan as well and to integrate that into this. The owner has ceded it down already.
What's the connection between those objectives and the rezoning? That's what I'm missing. I understand how it can be utilized for watershed improvements, but I don't see the connection to the rezoning destination.
We asked for R1 for the whole thing, but staff recommended, and we agree that it's more appropriate to do the Greenbelt Conservation District for that quarter.
So if you leave out that 40 acres, what are the remaining set-aside acres? What's the remaining development proportion?
So if we have 90, so we had 90 acres. I talked about 90 acres of open space. Mm-hmm. So if you take that 40 out, and it's a gross 40, it's not precise. We still have 50 acres of green space. So we're more at a 50-50 for what we have left if you pull that out. Our intent would be, so we have three drainage districts been discussed. One we're just a fractional part of. One we're the outlet for about 500 acres, and that's the one that Kurt alluded to that I worked earlier on. That was damaged in the 1993 floods, and so I did repair work on that in 96, 97, somewhere in there. That's got 500 acres that drains really all the way from Gilbert this direction. And then we have another smaller district that comes in on the south. And what we've really done here is we've avoided those drainage districts, impacting those. And it also gives us some opportunities to do things on a watershed basis that we're just beginning to, let's put it that way. Ames has some desires. The watershed authorities are going to have some desires, but you have opportunities to do flood mitigation. You have opportunities to do nutrient reduction. And to do all of those appropriately, we need space. And if we need that to do that, then we would like to do it in that southwest quarter, because I think that's the right place to do it. Not that we can't do some things in the other portions of the development, but if you want to do something in scale, and that has a lot of impact on nutrient trading, flood control, and whatnot, that all should be included.
And I know that we are not evaluating the merits of the actual subdivision tonight, but you're concept plan shows a nearly a half mile dead end road. Mm-hmm. Is there, do you anticipate then, I mean, is there any way to avoid asking for a waiver eventually on the dead end road maximum on this site?
So, no, there's not really, unless you want us to impact natural resources.
Meaning the floodplain.
No, meaning the natural resources in the other part. We wouldn't be in the floodplain ever. There's no reason to ever go that direction. I see what you're, and I think I see what you see. That hadn't really occurred to me that we would do that, that we would cross that area to get to the other road.
Right.
Well, we have a lot of, if you go back to the steep slope maps, we have a lot of steep slopes we want to avoid with roads as well. We kind of have managed to do that as part of this, so we're not, we don't have roads where there are steep slopes. And so the steep slopes kind of form a barrier to both the natural resources and where roads and where development would go. So again, we're left with kind of an area of the ground that we could do development on, and that's what we've done. Is this exactly how it's going to look? In principle, yeah, but there may be on the bottom, instead of 20-some lots, we may end up having 12 or 15 instead there. We may do something different in some of the other lots and have more density in that. We use the 25,000 as the kind of guiding light here, but you can do combined systems in R1 transitional down to 10,000 square feet where you share system septic systems. So some of you probably saw what you did at the Irons. You know, there's kind of a mixture of relatively large lots and a few smaller lots. It's possible we could do that here within the same framework and context.
Questions for that? We may have more in the future.
Yeah, that's fine.
Nice.
I'll stick around.
We now have a public hearing that will open. It gives any of you the opportunity you would like to speak about the proposal. We just ask that you come up to the podium one at a time and give your name and address for the record, and to keep your comments concise and try not to repeat previous comments. Anytime you like.
I'm Cindy Hildebrand, and I live at 574-39 250th Street. Sorry, I think I'm getting a little faint from hunger here, in Ames. I am here because I'm really interested in this development, because as has been pointed out, it could serve as a model for other developments in the future. And we've been given a background on the need for housing in Story County, and I wouldn't question a single thing that has been said about that. I am, however, going to give another kind of background quickly, with the understanding that you might know it already. Studies have been done recently in the amount of original landscape that is left in each state. Out of the 50 states, Iowa is number 50. We have less of our original landscape left than any other state, and that's especially true in central Iowa. I am old enough that I was around when the original Ames land use plan was developed. That's how old I am. And at that time, the city of Ames hired an out-of-town consultant to come in. And that consultant said specifically, you know, we've worked in a number of states. We've never seen a city that had less natural landscape to work with, so you people should really think about trying to protect what you've got. I believe that was part of the land use plan. So with that being said, I really appreciate the effort that is going to be made to, I'm assuming this rezoning is probably going to go through, to enable a natural area and a new development to be together. But there's an old saying in Don Quixote, whether the stone hits the pitcher or the pitcher hits the stone, it's going to be bad for the pitcher. And I think a whole lot of care is going to have to be taken to make sure that the beautiful polished stone in the form of the development isn't going to hit the pitcher, which is more delicate, which is the natural resource areas. I looked at the maps last night, and I also have talked with Tom Rosberg, because he's a friend of mine. And it appears to me possibly that there may be some conflicts between the dots that he found and the proposed layout. I realize that's not what you're dealing with, but I thought I would mention it. And also, I think it's great that Story County is probably going to be given management or ownership of a lot of this land. I would hope, though, that perhaps it might be possible to make it a little easier for them, because I've been doing prairie work for about 38 years. And my first thought when I look at that is, wow, I wouldn't want to try to burn that. It looks really like a challenge. And burning is one of the most important things that is needed to restore prairie remnants. Also, degraded prairie remnants, it's true, they're degraded, but they are still original prairie remnants, and there's still a significant difference between them and planted prairies. I was at a talk once where they brought up the issue of how long it would take, even with the very best kind of planting, to have a piece of land that was planted that was the equivalent in terms of soil quality and everything else to an original prairie. And they studied the rate at which the soil was recovering under prairie plants and plantings, and the estimate they came up with was 4 centuries. So that's one reason why some of us are so enthused about trying to save the little bits that we have left, even if they are degraded, because often they can be brought back to a better condition. And in the spirit of keeping things short, I'll just end, and I'm sorry this will not be a cheerful note, with things that have actually happened elsewhere in Iowa around the country when subdivisions have been built right next to natural areas. And I'm saying it out loud in the spirit of, if you tell your nightmare won't come true. So I'm just going to list some of these things in the hope that it won't come true in this case. Construction soil and runoff affects them. Stormwater pollution from the hard surfaces of the new roads and the new roofs and the new driveways and the lawns affect them. Invasive species that are planted by the homeowners invade the natural area. Tiling work and drainage work extends out into the prairie, and that affects it. The sewage systems affect it because it turns out they extend into it. Roaming pets, cats are very good at killing ground nesting birds, which nest on prairies. Homeowners decide that the natural area is the great place to dump their grass clippings and their branches and other things, you know, their compost, whatever. Like I said, I'm not saying that this is going to happen in this case. I'm just listing him in the spirit of, if I say it out loud, surely it won't come true. That having been said, thank you very much to everyone who's been involved in this to try to make sure that this can be potentially a project that allows this natural area to be protected and restored.
Thank you. Any other comments?
My name is John Johnson. My brother Jeff and I own the property immediately to the north of the proposed rezoned property. So I'm just here maybe to ask some questions that I hope I can get a few answers to. My number one question would be, how are LISA scores established and who does that?
Yeah, that's something. A LISA score is computed by planning and development staff. It's an evaluation that looks at the corn suitability rating and looks at the existing and surrounding zoning, the surrounding land use of a property, its proximity to a city, its proximity to things like sanitary sewer, public transit lines. And so the higher score is in essence supposed to correspond with more valuable agricultural land.
Okay, I mean, that would seem obvious to me. I guess my question is, is always evaluated on a quarter of a quarter? I mean, how do you establish what you evaluate for the LISA score?
Yeah, it's evaluated per parcel. So if one of these quarters was just divided, we would look at the two pieces or the three pieces.
You would actually be four partial instead of the quarter.
Yes.
Quarter.
Yep.
Then my question would be why you did not conduct a LISA score for the ground in the northwest quarter and the southwest quarter that are currently in crop production, as opposed to including all the property included, which includes a lot of the pasture, which I think most of us would agree, all of us here would agree, is not optimal for farmland. But that other farm ground, I mean, the northwest quarter comes in at 266. That's kind of split hairs between 266 and 267, I would say. And you state right in the principle of the agriculture conservative area that it is fundamental principle in Story County is to conserve agricultural land as well as agricultural practices. So that wasn't taken into consideration.
I believe it was.
Yeah, I would ask you to go back and reevaluate and do another LISA score on just the 25 acres and the 19 acres and tell us that their LISA scores are below 267. That would be a request.
Okay, we evaluate them based on the parcel, which is the full quarter.
You said you could do them in partials and parcels, and that ground obviously has been used for different purposes.
Each parcel. So if... for example, we could do a LISA score on the your farmstead, separate from your farmland. But if it's one parcel, at this time we don't compute scores for areas because it is an average of the corn suitability rating on the property.
Then, in essence, we really aren't interested in preserving prime farm ground in Story County. Next question would be, I don't understand the math. We talked about approving rezoning for three quarters, and your recommendation is for 14 homes per quarter. I multiplied by 3 by 14, I get 42, so I'm just wondering where the number 56 came from.
Yeah, so the Eagle Ridge subdivision is a quarter in size, and it has 14 lots. We're looking at this subdivision as 160 acres, or a quarter in size. And so quarters. So 14 times 4 would be 56.
But you said that you cannot do housing on the floodplain area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a part of what they're proposing to develop, but it's a part of what they're requesting a rezoning for. And they intend to use that southwest quarter for stormwater drainage, erosion control, and for recreational use. So it's a part of what's being requested for rezoning and is intended to be a part of the subdivision plat if the rezoning is approved.
That's the reason that they want to do this, so that they can get more houses. I understand. I guess my question to Mr. Friedrich would be, how do you intend to construct this road along here without obstructing the natural flow of water?
I'll answer that. At the end of this, I'll answer all the questions.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's really going to work smoothly. If you do have questions for the applicant, if you just air them and allow that they'll come up at the end
and
answer any questions all in order.
I would like to say that if you do go ahead and vote to rezone this area, I certainly would endorse the recommendation of 14 houses per quarter. I honestly think that placing any houses there is not consistent with the number one principle in the C2C R1 residential area, which, forgive me, I'll quote it so I do not misstate it. To ensure that a new development is sensitive to the predominantly rural nature of the area, and let me remind you that the statistics from your own staff say that 94.53% is agricultural and 5.47% is residential. All residential lots are over 1 acre in size. So I guess putting empty houses in that area doesn't seem to me to be consistent with maintaining the predominantly rural nature of the area. I guess I'll skip some of my other questions and just skip to the one. I noticed that there were questions posed in the report from the staff raising questions, and then one of the questions was, are there any plans to help buffer the proposed eastern and northern lots from existing livestock farms? And I guess my question would be, let's reverse that. Are there any proposals for buffering the livestock farms from the housing development? I spent the majority of my working career as a practicing veterinarian in production animal medicine. And my brother and I and Roy Riley both have cattle on premises. And I feel I can speak from a fairly authoritative point of view, viewed in my working nature, that sudden noises, sudden movements, a lot of extra traffic, accelerating, decelerating, is going to be very unsettling to cattle. And I just wonder what sort of reassurances we're going to get that we aren't going to have cattle going through the fence because somebody decides to shoot off fireworks. Somebody decides to walk across the road and be snoopy. You know, these type of things happen. And, you know, that is a concern of ours. We're all worried about protecting the urban residents from the influence of agriculture, and I remind you, we do live in the state of Iowa. What about the buffer for the agriculture area versus the urban area? So I did have some other questions, but since maybe some of them need to be answered later, I'll quit. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Roy Riley. I live right at the very northeast corner of the proposed property. I've been farming this farm for Bob Dotson for about 25 years. Bob is a very responsible, good landlord. Took great care of making sure that things were, you know, the same thing you guys are proposing. Is take care of the land, make sure you're in compliance with the government, keep the fertility up, those types of things. And I can tell you that the said property on the bottom that he put in CRP, that ground is so good. It's the best corn crop I ever raised in my life was on that farm. And northeast corner, which your 266 score, has a corn average on my government insurance of an average of 200 per acre. So it is very highly productive, including the 6 acres down the corner is another 200 acre bushel field. So the argument of a poor ground is in my eyes, from 25 years I farmed, it is wrong. Probably the farm in total for agriculture, with the use of the 66 acres of pasture, which will carry one cow on 2 acres, and normally it's 2.5. Very highly productive for grazing of cattle also. So the whole farm is very productive for agriculture. One of the things that John Johnson mentioned about this road down through the side here, if I could point out right there, that area there, you have some rains like we had this year, which if you're in the mind of climate change and the amount of rain and we're supposed to be, you know, this is the norm. You aren't going to get I don't know what kind of plan, and I'm sure Mr. Fox will address this, but you aren't going to get a ambulance or a fire truck or anything down to those southern houses if you have a 3 or 4 inch rain. Because you can't believe the amount of water that goes down through there. I've seen it, witnessed it. You know, I've lived there. As far as the backside of the houses up here that are adjacent to my property, my cow-calf herd is, they say, a 50-foot buffer. Well, if they got a whole bunch of dogs right there, it's going to be a real problem. You know, I mean, you just that's just the nature of the beast when you have cow-calf herd. You know, if they're going to put me out of business, I guess that's so be it, because the liability would probably be too much. The road to the north is a farm-to-market road. I don't know if, how familiar you are with how many tractors and wagons are on that road at all time. You put another 700 vehicles on that road with all them tractors and wagons year-round. I mean, this isn't just fall. This is hauling the grain to town during the summer when one of the neighbors decides to haul grain to town. And there's a lot of guys that haul with wagons. There's another problem you need to consider. The other thing that I think the zoning board should consider is the property that, well, I know Friedrich owns at least 120 acres down on the south side of Cameron School Road that isn't developed yet. How many houses are they going to put in there? How many more houses do we need? How many more houses is this county going to support for the jobs? What industries are coming in to support the people that are going to buy all these houses? I think Buck Hill Estates isn't full. There's spec homes sitting empty around Ames. I mean, I've been talking to some realtors about this. The amount of other developers besides Friedrich that have land that has lots available, a lot closer to Ames. You need to keep the homes closer to Ames, separate the agricultural equipment that's on the north side of Cameron School Road there north. That is all still farm ground. There's still a lot of traffic of equipment that has to come up and down those roads. I don't know if I forgot any more points I had. Let me take a look at it. Oh, another thing to consider, and I'm no soothsayer of the economy, but back in the 70s when the economy got good like it is right now and the Wall Street's going crazy and all of a sudden the Fed's up in interest rates, next year they've already proposed 3 interest rate hikes. So what's that going to do to the housing market? Are we going to get 10 homes out here and all of a sudden interest rates hit 10-12% and nobody can afford to build and we've ruined a very productive farm because of interest rates stopping it? You know, when we could have been building down closer to Ames, we could have been building the Buck Hill Estates. Do we really need to take another development this soon? This, you know, and so be it. Bob Dotson wants to get as much money for his farm as he can. I understand that. My family farm is on North Dakota. We're in the same predicament. I'm the youngest of 9. I grew up there. We aren't sure what to do with it. You know, is it developable? It's right next to the Beef Nutrition Farm. It sits a quarter mile from Cameron School Estates. Across the road, there's a development. You know, these are questions you guys got to ask yourselves. Are we building too far out? You know, are we affecting the agriculture because we're building too far from Ames? We need to stay closer, move up the line, rather than, you know, 20 years from now, yeah, maybe this might be the right farm to build on. But for now, no, let's stick closer to town. And I guess that's about all I got on it. But just food for thought for the board to, you know, that's all I guess I wanted to say. Thank you.
Any other comments from the public?
I'm Carrie Gallahan. I'm with the City of Gilbert and City Council. And I will say that we just recently annexed 80 acres in Gilbert. So you think about homes closer to towns. Those are in our town. They're soon to be developed, the first 40, I believe. They'll probably start on it as soon as they can break ground on it. The other question that I had, and I can't I didn't read the whole slide, and you didn't read the part about the water, Xenia's water, and fire control.
Sure.
I think it's 59.
Oh, okay, thank you.
I'm not sure. I noticed that about 62. Oh, shoot, I should have written that down.
So. Yeah. Here. Yeah, so Xenia did indicate that between their 6-inch main on, along 500th Avenue and their 2-inch water line that extends to the farmstead directly to the north of the subject property, They could provide for residential development. They could provide service for residential development.
But it does not, however, have capacity for fire flow.
For fire flow or residential irrigation.
So that's a concern because it's my fire department that's going to go out there. So where do you think they're going to haul the water from? It's going to be my water too, right? If they have to haul water there, if their lines aren't big enough, or they don't, Xenia doesn't provide enough water there, then that's the city of Gilbert that's going to have to provide the water to that area. There's also a small concern of more traffic going through town. Now, I know that there's County Line Road goes north and south, so they can, you know, go north through there. They can go south to Campus Town area of Ames. George Washington Carver is another one. But there, I do believe there will be more traffic going through Gilbert. I know the school... This is great for the school because it's money for the school. But being on city council, I think about all those kids that go to school and all the cars that bring them to school because a lot of parents take their kids to school or extra activities or practice after school or sporting events. That's a lot of stress on our town as well. When it's this close. So for me, if I'm going to have that many more kids in our school system, I'd rather they live in the town. I'd rather they start paying for our new water system. I'd rather that they start paying taxes there. So that's all I have.
Can I ask you a question just for clarification? You mentioned that you're on the Gilbert City Council. Should we take your comments as representing the city specifically or representing yourself as a citizen of Gilbert?
You can, either way, city's fine.
Okay.
Are
those the positions of the city of Gilbert?
That I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, we haven't really discussed it. Our next council meeting is next week. So.
Okay. Forgive me, I thought it was important to ask because we try to work in cooperation with the cities as best we can.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public? Mr. Renaud, would you like to address any of those questions?
This is not Friedrich's first go-around with a rural subdivision. It is one, as Kurt indicated, it's really high rate of open space in relation to the rest of the ground. In 2005, they built a Regenberg subdivision, which is in Ames itself. It's built as a conservation subdivision design. It has natural areas incorporated into it. And when we did that, we learned quite a few things about controlling builders, controlling the construction work and sediment control and things like that, which we then incorporated into when we did Cameron Estates, which also by requirement it's required to have 15% open space, but it has a little bit more than that, I think 16-17%, depending on how you want to calculate it. And so to answer Cindy's questions on that is I think we've got a good procedure here of how we manage these subdivisions. We'll have virtually no erosion because we typically are not tearing very much stuff up, and then we always have systems that are designed close and far away to manage erosion. We'll get a lot more erosion off the farm ground coming to this site than we will get from our own subdivision. Our subdivision, when it's built, will incorporate taking care of that erosion from farm ground as well as our own. It's just going to be part of the system. So we'll handle the nutrients and the erosion and the things that happen with that. To answer the one gentleman's question is the county road standards are fairly specific, but we're designing for a 100-year event for culverts, and the roads and ditches are designed for 100 years events. We typically don't round down, we round up, and so typically there's some additional factor of safety that's in there when we do those things. So, you know, we have seen, and you've seen, this county has seen, Ames has seen, Gilbert has seen 6-inch rainfalls that happen in very short periods of time. So we're certainly cognizant of that and aware of that as far as the design. I've been doing this now. This is my 32nd year. I had to think about it there for a little bit. Been doing this for a long time. How I approach drainage is a little bit different than when I started. And really, we're all following the standards that are set before us. The county engineer follows those same standards, and we're a lot more cautious because of the really large and severe rainfall events. So we are cognizant of that and incorporate that into the design. Fail safes, so we kind of know when things go wonky and bad, what happens. Some of the things we incorporated at Cameron and learned at Cameron we're using here. For instance, in order to keep people out of the natural space, that's been planted to prairie is we're putting in fences that are on the back side of the development. We put in a three-wire, a smooth wire fence to keep the people from construction equipment going in and out, to kind of delineate where the natural area is, and so people know where that is. There's a sign on every corner post of the development that explains the things you can and can't do in that area. And basically, it's fairly passive type recreation. You can walk through it and you can pick the flowers, but you know you can't, you know, dump your grass clippings and your tree limbs and have a garden there and put the playset and the trampoline there. Those are the things you can't do. And that has been very successful. Some of the things that we want to do here that I did not like how it happened in Cameron is the septic systems. We're going to ask for and demand a higher level of septic system here that really just eliminates problems. Problems for the county, problems for the homeowner, problems for the builder. And so we're just going to kind of coordinate that and do, I think, a little bit better job of really kind of doing it as a group instead of each individual having to do their own things. We are aware that a lot of the people that are coming out here are coming from the city or coming from somewhere else, and they're not used to septic systems. So we're having a system that really can handle the fact that they're going to do something stupid. And Jerry's a plumber. He can speak to that himself. We could probably have a good discussion for a half hour of all the dumb things people have done. But we're cognizant of that and want to take care of that. We do like one of the reasons we even had the buffer in here before, we had the buffer on here before the county requested it, is we want the fences to be the homeowners association issue and not an individual homeowner. So we do not want a homeowner's fence backing up to the property. We want to keep that away so that we have a good fences, make good neighbors, so we want to keep that in effect and make sure that works. The Riggenberg farm is next to Iowa State's farms, so we have the same farm issues that you would have that we're going to have here, probably even to a worse extent, because they have sheep, and sheep in particular are more susceptible to dogs doing things and whatnot. What I've understood from the county is they actually somewhat like the dogs because they keep the coyotes away from the sheep. So that's neither here nor there, but there's always an upside for some things where there's a downside. I grew up in Grinnell. Very similar looking ground to this. When I grew up, we had 250 cows and very similar property, so I know and lived right next to the city of Grinnell. We have ground on the highway. My parents sold 20 acres to Walmart so they could build a Walmart store. That's how close we are. So all the issues that we're talking about here, you know, I'm very aware of. One of the reasons we put the road as a frontage road there is we have the road separating us from our north neighbor. So we're pushing ourselves away from that neighbor. We have the front of the lots, which generally don't have a lot of activity, towards that road, towards our neighbor, with the rear of the lots facing into the subdivision. So there's a lot of things that have been incorporated into this that we've learned over the period of time in order to do a really nice, what we call a conservation subdivision. These things have been around for a long time with areas of the country that have had more development pressure than Ames. New York, Wisconsin, Minnesota uses a conservation design. Early in my career, a long time ago, I read a book by Randall Arndt, and he talks about conservation design, and a lot of those principles are in use everywhere. And so those are incorporated in here as well. There's always going to be some issues that we have to resolve, but we also resolve some issues that are there that are not being resolved, i.e. the erosion from the farm ground, the nutrients, and things like that. So I think on the invasive species front, that was the last issue that Cindy talked about, is we've got that wholesale already. In doing the walkthrough, we've got cedars that are probably going to take over a lot of this ground if nothing's done. We've got thorny honey locust, which might be a native plant, but it's certainly a very nasty one that is in the ground. Most of the trees that you're going to find on this site, regardless of how that CGC plan looks at them, are in either invasive or non-native, just because you didn't pasture it and whatnot. So I don't have I don't place a lot of value on the trees, just because I don't really think they're doing anything. Your erosion increases when you have trees generally, because they don't really protect the soil as well as the prairie. And so I'd prefer to have prairie than I would to have trees. If this isn't managed, if it's just left as its own, then there's going to be some issues. And we're fortunate that really there's some degraded natural resources that are there. And I have done the very similar things here where we pull the cows out and let areas go. And the prairie will really ridge fire really pretty well if you leave it alone. It's not always it's not a quick process. And that's without any assistance. My brother was ill for a couple years and didn't pasture about 100 acres of pasture ground. And so for 2 or 3 years, it was unpastured, and it was really a nice thing. I have lots of friends now that are pheasant hunters all of a sudden that like to talk to me. But that's nothing's constant, and what we're trying to do here is change from a kind of impermanent situation to a constant situation. One of the things we learned about the management of these green space areas is that so at some point, I'm done with dealing with the green space, Hertz done with dealing with the green space, and the homeowners association takes over the green space. What we've found is that is really not desirable, is that we don't have a consistency of purpose or of idea of what the green space is. And so to answer your question on the county management, in talking with Mike Cox, I'm not presuming that conservation wants to do this, but I think it's great that they are talking about it, is we think it's a better constant source of doing the management of the open space than for the homeowners association. Because there are changes in leadership and changes in how that gets managed. The county can provide some consistency with that and consistency of purpose and really meeting the C2C plan. So we like that idea a lot and think that's a great idea. And from that standpoint, at a certain point, converting that ground to park ground, at least in part, if not all. And then the other part of that is a funding mechanism, because everything has to be, there's some sort of funding, but if you look at 80 lots at $10 a month, we're generating 10 grand a year to do maintenance for this. So all these things that we're learning, we're putting together to try to make this thing the nicest subdivision but that the county can be proud of, Kurt Frieder can be proud of, Fox and Junior can be proud of, and the board can look back on and say that was done well.
Thank you.
May we ask some questions?
Yes, go ahead. For me?
Yes.
Okay. Let me first officially close the public hearing of the portion of the consideration. Go ahead.
Okay. Several things. You mentioned the septic systems. Are they like the Advantix?
So there's several upper-end systems. Advantix is one of them that are more, I like to say they're more monitorable. In other words, if something goes wrong, you can fix them.
Okay.
Conventional septic system, usually you know something's wrong when water starts flowing across the ground. These systems that I'm talking about are hooked into the internet, and there'll be a monitoring system that'll say, hey, the system's not working right, you better maintain it. And then at that point, you can fix it, as opposed to letting it basically completely fail and have to replace the entire thing.
Well, that would be a good thing, because what I have looked at in internet searches on these kinds of systems is they're recommending, they're not very large, they recommend cleaning them out at least once a year, and I don't think any city dweller who goes out in the country is going to be understanding that a septic system needs to be cleaned out. So that would be...
Yeah, yeah. That's what we're pointing to.
In terms of you know, what I consider a pretty sensitive area. You know, you're putting how many septic systems out there with people who don't, you know.
Right. And we're seeing that, and that's one of the reasons we want to go to a different system that is a little bit higher end and can really counteract some of the negative things that can happen.
That's one of my concerns about having that much density out there. The other thing is, you talked about invasive species. I do not think that Ms. Hildebrand was referring to the species that are there now. I think she was referring to things that homeowners would bring out, their normal things that they would plant, you know. Let's hope nobody puts crown dash out there, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that entirely, what you're talking about here. Generally, what we're seeing is probably the worst one that they plant is bluegrass. And that's the other reason for doing this the way we do, is we create a definitive boundary between the prairie and the homeowners. Because what you see on large lot subdivisions, and Eagle Ridge is a good example, is people mow 100% of their acre and a half lot. They don't have any natural areas in it at all.
Are you talking about, but this may fit into something else I wrote down. Are you talking about the county maintaining all of that open space?
Yes.
All that lawn?
Basically? No, just the common open space.
What's the common open space?
It's everything that's not, this color is not real good, but pink. So everything that's not pink.
That would be gray, the aerial color.
Yeah.
The county would maintain that?
Yes.
I can't see the county being very interested in that, but I'm not speaking for the county, but...
Again, that's, you know, we're in preliminary discussions. Our idea is to get it converted to the open space, and then we're not telling the county, here, you fix this. We're going to get it done, and then it's a maintenance issue at that point.
Okay. The other thing that Ms. Hildebrand said, that when I heard it, I thought, I hadn't thought about that before, is that the best way to manage prairie is fire.
Right.
And you're putting these units right up next to the place where Dr. Rosberg has said there are degraded things that can come back.
In an area where you don't have enough water to
So that's a concern I have.
But can I address that? There are companies that will do fire management for you and who are set up just for these specific things, because this is in the realm of subdivisions in Wisconsin, Minnesota, rural areas is relatively common. And so it's not unusual. The idea, generally, since all these people are mowing their grass, and you got to remember, there's a 50-foot setback in the rear and the front, and nothing on the sides, but your side is against the neighbor. So you've got a mowed grass strip 50 feet wide that keeps you away from the prairie. So it's just a matter of management.
And did you say that having domesticated dogs out there would be good because it would keep the coyotes away from the sheep?
Well, that is the case in the Regenberg Farms, yeah. Yeah. But there's no sheep here.
There's no sheep, and these aren't... Yeah, okay.
Hey, so my farm, again, sits next to Grinnell, and Grinnell College students, when the semester's over, dump their dogs in the country. So I'm familiar with dogs being an issue. And usually it's the feral dogs that are an issue. It's not the dogs that are associated with the house.
Okay. And you're kind of claiming that you understand prairie restoration here.
Yes.
And you talked about Cameron Estates and you had a fence so people wouldn't dump their branches or their grass clippings there, but it was okay for them to go pick the wildflowers.
Sure.
I don't think you want the wildflowers being picked if you're trying to get a prairie to.
I think my point is there is you want people to interact with the prairie. You don't. Yeah. It's not. You want to walk through it.
Okay.
And you can pick all the flowers you want. At some point, you're going to get tired because you can't pick them all. Cindy, am I right?
Or not?
Well, but what I'm saying is generally we're not talking about a huge thing.
Sensitivity issue to what is going to have to happen.
If on the little sign that you want, again, we have a little sign that explains all the things, and it's on every lot at least twice, at Cameron Estates. If you want to say, don't pick the wildflowers, that's fine. We'll just add that to
the I'm just trying to understand your sensitivity towards these issues, the understanding of all the issues that will come up with restoring a degraded prairie.
Sure.
And I'm not feeling it, I have to tell you.
Well, you know what you need to understand is our my family farm was done in all conservation. You can go look at it. It's still in conservation. It's all in row crop. My mother was the first woman state commissioner for the Soil Conservation Service. She's on the state board. My father and my mother have won awards for how we've done conservation on our farm. And I've got native prairie that we've restored on our farm. I know what I'm talking about. I'm an ag engineer. I'm not a civil engineer. My degree's in soil and water. This is what I do.
You
can look at this as an option to, I believe that development is a tool that allows you to do some other things that are good. And then that's the case here, is we're doing a lot of good with this. The alternatives are not as good as you would like because you lose control. We're giving you control as part of this development. But if this stays in ag or we develop it as extremely large lots, you don't have any control. And this, from my standpoint, is the better route to go versus doing either leaving it in ag or which is the other option, which is allowed within the code, is to have 6 or 8 large lots and you have 6 or 8 large houses out here and that's all you have. So
any other specific questions for Scott?
Yes, is there a fence clear around all this? Because of the people with the livestock, I understand. We have livestock. We have people come out from town, build next to us, and now I've lived there 100 years, and they've lived there 1 year, and they're complaining, and I understand where they're coming from. So are you going to keep, we have to keep everybody else's stuff out of ours. Are you keeping your dogs, and I know people have them, and they run across the road with cows and calves. So is there a fence clear around that to keep them out?
There's currently a fence completely around all this property, yes.
I know there's currently, but is it going to be kept?
I would envision that some of the fence on the county road on the west side would probably go away at some point because you're talking about asking for a trail there. Trails and fences are generally not good neighbors.
We have a trail on our farm that down by Collins, Iowa. I know all about bike trails. I won't say what I should say, but I understand fences, but you need a fence. And firecrackers is not real good, and I could see where that could be a problem. I live by Hickory Grove Lake. I understand all this.
Any other questions, Scott? Thank you.
Thanks.
Before we start deliberating, I think we've got some procedural things just to highlight. First, we're actually asked to take 2 actions tonight. One on the plan designation change, correct?
Yeah.
And one on the rezoning. I know that we have lumped them into one recommendation, but they're actually two different actions. They depend on each other so much that they're presented as one, but there are 2 different actions here. I wanted to clarify with the staff that your long list of recommendations actually applies to the rezoning, correct? There's not a mechanism for a conditional change in plan designation.
Correct. So the conditions apply to the rezoning request. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not necessarily recommending you do this, but I think if it helps, it would be appropriate for you to separate them into 2 actions and 2 motions if you like. If it doesn't help, then it's fine to lump them together too. But there were 2 applications submitted, correct? 1 application to amend the zoning map or the plan map designation, and 1 to change the zoning.
That's correct.
Yeah. They're done through separate. The rezoning is through an ordinance, and the map, the C2C map is, amendment is through a resolution.
I have a question
for Emily. Emily, on your set of recommendations, which number of recommendation did you have in there about number of lots?
It's number one. So the.
Could you show us that again, please?
Yep. So the first proposed condition is that the overall density of the future subdivision shall be consistent with the density of the Eagle Ridge subdivision located to the south, not to exceed 14 development lots per quarter, in order to match the existing character of the area.
So what does that mean for this particular subdivision? It would go from 80 to
56.
Thank you.
There's kind of a couple of which I just want to comment on that point, yeah. Which is that's still kind of a margin, right? Because you're calculating the number 56 based on four quarters.
That's correct.
As was pointed out earlier, if you're talking 14 development lots per quarter, if you match the Eagle Ridge subdivision, then you're talking 42, right? So what you're doing is already an increase in density.
It's a total density for the entire subdivision.
Right, but the entire subdivision is three quarters. I understand the zoning, right? But one of them is not going to be developed because it's a flip one.
Right. And we're not considering the subdivision tonight. We're considering
just considering the zoning. So if we're putting conditions on it.
Right. And the main reason for that first condition is with regard to the provision in the zoning map amendment that talks to the fact that the proposed rezoning shall be compatible with surrounding land uses and development patterns. So. You're not looking.
No, I get why. I just want to, evaluate the math.
The inclusion of that southwest 40 acres is troubling to me. It feels like a manipulation to be able to say we're setting aside a higher percentage of open space and we are close to similar land use. It is a total quarter mile square of land that is lumped in there, and I find that problematic. Also, there's some kind of interdependencies in your conditions that I find interesting. So, one of the conditions to this rezoning is that the applicant bring another rezoning request.
Correct.
And I know they can agree to anything, but if we rezone this, we are rezoning it for the foreseeable future.
Well, the southwest quarter technically can't be rezoned because it has too high of a leases for. So
at this time,
we're trying to compel them to bring a rezoning application to Greenbelt Conservation for that.
Right.
To a more restrictive district.
Right. Yeah. To provide for future protections.
I understand that you're using a conditional rezoning to compel another rezoning application.
But you think because of the lease score, we couldn't rezone it?
It says that
Greenbelt?
Because the lease score is too high, it cannot be considered.
But how do we rezone it now?
No, hold on, sorry.
The southwest quarter cannot be approved.
It cannot be upzoned. It can't be zoned for residential development.
Mm-mm. Correct.
But it could be, we could.
Yeah, if it's an A1 or an A2 district and it has a high lease score, it says it shall not be approved to some other district. To any other
district. Not even Greenbelt Conservation.
No, so that's why they would need to count on the zoning change from A1 to R1 for the other three quarter-quarters.
In order to
lower the score visa. For the southwest, correct.
Can you explain the logic behind that?
I'm sorry?
Can you explain the logic behind that? Not the manipulation or the calculation, but the logic that it would be that way.
To prohibit the rezoning?
Yeah.
Well, that southwest quarter is, you know, it is in the floodplain, but it's a part of the equation, part of what they submitted.
Can I try to interpret? So you're saying the logic of it being in the zoning code that way at all?
Correct.
It is very restrictive. I would guess that some places have exceptions to that. For example, if you're going to a more restrictive district, our code is not written that way.
Could we leave it as that parcel as A1?
Well, technically, it needs to stay A1 because they cannot currently include it.
Okay.
The use of the parcel for stormwater management, for open space, are the principal permitted uses in the Greenbelt Conservation District, rather than the A1 district, which is agriculture.
Just seems like an odd quirk to make a condition of this rezoning that in the future the applicant will apply for another rezoning for a portion of the property. It would seem to me that if the visa score is dropped, the county can initiate its own rezoning on that parcel.
But they're the ones that are bringing the request to change the zoning and the use of the land. So,
okay, so
in essence, we're trying to work with them on that.
I may have missed something. So back to procedure. How many zoning requests, not plan change requests, how many zoning requests do we have? Is it one zoning request?
We have one zoning request and one C2C.
Okay. So we have one zoning request, but it's for four parcels.
Correct.
And staff is recommending approval of three of those.
Okay. That's where the part that I was missing. So it's one zoning request covering four parcels. We're going to approve, or the recommendation is to approve three parcels, not the southwest parcel, because it can't be changed until at least the score is brought down by the change to the other.
Correct.
And then we're counting on the request to come to change that to Greenbelt Conservation.
That would be part of the condition of approval.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
If I lose my voice, I apologize. For the sake of time, I'm going to make a motion to approve the REC 04-18 with the staff's recommendations number 2-7.
A motion by Cable. Is there a second? Motion fails for lack of a second. Jared, we have a zoning district called Residential Conservation, RC, conservation-oriented.
It's an overlay district.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And one of the conditions that you proposed is to pull in certain standards from that zoning district and make them a part of, essentially make them a part of this R1 rezoning. Why do we not just use the conservation district?
Because it's for this development, it's not something that should be applied. There are standards in there that wouldn't make sense for what they're proposing to do.
What are the differences?
Well, there's design requirements for roads, there's tree requirements.
Sidewalk
requirements. There's a sidewalk requirement, sidewalk to where. I'm an advocate for sidewalks. I believe in sidewalks for a number of reasons, but they are willing to provide for space for the trail that's identified in the comprehensive plan along the north and along the west. But
this would seem to be an ideal place for a good set of residential conservation subdivision standards. And if our current ones fall short in some way, it seems like
they seem to be set up for more of an, I'm sorry, but more of an urban location with some of the things that are identified in there.
But, I mean, yeah.
81 units.
And, you know, conceptually and in the comments that they provided, they are proposing a conservation development here.
Well, they're proposing the inexpensive parts of a conservation subdivision.
Well, and by asking for the R1, we've got smaller lot sizes, so we're not having that potential of impacting the environmentally sensitive areas. They could request.
Is there a maximum lot size on an R1 district?
Just a minimum.
Right.
So they could be larger.
So they could still be larger lots.
But the goal is to preserve these natural areas, and you run the risk with larger lots of having some of these natural areas within the lots. And you can do easements, but
you run the risk of if we did like an AR type where we required larger lots, right? So here we have a minimum allowable of 25,000 square feet. We did AR, then it's a minimum allowable of 1 acre, but there's not a maximum, right? So
right.
Even if we did this proposal, even if we did do as recommended, with that included option or condition one that limited them to 56 homes, right? We could still see that exact map, but instead of numbered 1 through 81, it's numbered 1 through 56. It's just that the lot sizes cover the exact same territory, it's just bigger.
Right, I'm not sure if you're getting to this, but one of the conditions is that we have even greater field data than what we have, and that there's an attempt to actually map the areas of the natural environmentally sensitive areas. You know, there may be more than what was identified. And,
you know, that's a good point, Jerry. There may be more than what's actually been identified.
That's part of one of the conditions.
And we're working with, but we're working with changing the zoning now, and we're working with doing things now that might be a so what by that time. You know.
Yeah, I think we've gone down this road before with this is a zoning, and until the zoning designation is changed to give Mr. Friedrich a reason to do more investigation and more engineering and more development, then it's not going to happen. So we're not here to approve the merits of the proposed plan or the how much or how it's laid out or whatever. That will come as a future platting and development request and, you know, approval. So
right.
that's where these points, which I know Kathy has concerns about fencing and buffering, which are valid. Linda has concerns about protecting the what's there, making sure that we identify what's there and deal with it appropriately. You know, I think there's a number of concerns that have been addressed and brought up. I think that those are all concerns and things that come at the next step, right? How are those addressed, right? Is there a fencing requirement? Is there an increased buffer requirement and things? In this step, we're just putting conditions on saying if we rezone it, when we rezone it, there's a maximum number of houses, there's an easement, there's the 7 different conditions, which then give Mr. Friedrich a framework to then investigate. Does this still make financial sense to pursue and then address those concerns or not, right?
Right. They have graciously provided a lot more information than what you would typically get on a rezoning request. And because they have provided that information, we've been able to dig in and make a lot of, we've communicated greatly with the applicants, with the Conservation Department, and because of this information, we were able to put together some strong conditions. And we want to make it clear to the applicant what the expectations were.
Right.
So that there was no questions when the plat was submitted, if the rezoning was approved.
So based on that, I make a motion to approve the plan change and to approve the rezoning of the three buildable lots using the seven conditions as suggested by staff.
Motion by Smith. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Cable. Your roll call vote, please.
Merkin.
No.
Miz.
No.
Smith.
Yes.
Steele.
No.
Cable.
Yes.
The motion fails. Anyone like to offer an alternative motion? Without an alternative motion, we would have to forward no recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. I'd prefer not to do that.
Do you have a suggestion?
Your alternatives are in the staff report. You could recommend denial or remand the
proposal back to the staff and the applicant for further review, but
I highly recommend we have some detailed things we'd like them to further review if we do that. We're not just kicking the can down the road.
And if there aren't any further motions, this is what would go up to the Board of Supervisors on the 11th.
What would?
With this vote.
Okay. That would be.
Of two in support of the motion that Mario made and three in recommending denial.
Okay.
Not supporting it.
Okay. So the voting record is the recommendation. Okay. All right. It appears we're comfortable with that. All right. Thank you, everybody, for coming in. The voting record, as you saw tonight, will advance to the Board of Supervisors for a decision. We are a recommending body. And so there's more meetings happening ahead of you. Thanks for coming in.
So if we can just hold up, actually we're going to take
a 2-minute recess to sign these for you, and then we're going to wrap up, okay? Here. I'm going to consider Linda ready to roll.
Yeah.
Okay. So, staff comments.
We don't really have anything other than you mentioned we will need probably in January a representative from the Planning and Zoning Commission to serve on the CAFO committee. Aaron did that, but since he's resigning,
there we go.
We'll need somebody to do that. Preferably with an agricultural farm background is helpful.
I'll volunteer.
Okay. All right.
There you go.
And then Linda was on the economic development group. She was appointed to that, so since she's leaving, that'll be another appointment. It should be made. And I just want to say
I can volunteer for the economic development. Currently, we have members that are not here, and let's revisit that in our next meeting.
But I will
hand my volunteer. I have some economics background, so I might be interested. But
Right. I just want to say on behalf of staff that, Aaron, we greatly appreciate your role as chair. You've been a mentor to the commission, and you provided a lot of viable input and assistance in the 3 years that I've been here, and you've been great to work with. Linda, it's been great working with you also.
Also to the end.
The 2 years have gone very fast. We appreciate your input, and good luck in your new role. And we look forward to working with you as a supervisor.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Any commission comments?
I just wanted to share my letter with the other commission members. Because I just wanted to say how much it has meant to me being on planning and zoning commission. I think we've done great work. And I also shared the letter with staff earlier. So thanks for the kind words.
Thank you.
I also like to say I don't have a letter.
You can't say anything unless you have a letter.
That's right, me too. Oh, that's right.
But I really appreciated it. And the staff, I think you guys went so hard. And I always like to be over there. It's been interesting to be
you
here.
Sat here, so you know. Yeah.
Yep. And I really appreciated the experience. I think you guys are doing a good job. And you've done, I think, some innovative stuff. While I've been here.
Thank you.
We talk about that all the time.
We've tried.
Yeah.
We don't like status quo.
Oh, I have one more thing. Sorry. I don't mean to make this long meeting that much longer. But our joint meeting kind of got cut off there at the end. And I'm not suggesting you put this on the work program, but this is a personal thing for me talking to innovative staff members.
Right.
I think the county really needs to look at accessory dwellings. I think if you, I know of lots of granny flats that are out there right now. They're just under the radar. And I think they are great things in an aging society. I just think they're going to become more and more necessary with time. And they give people who live out in the country an opportunity to add a little economic value to their homes. Obviously, it has to be really well designed and implemented, but I love the idea, and as a part of that, I encourage you to.
So reuse, repurpose.
I would second that, and I agree, because it also gives people an opportunity that live in the country to stay in the country, right?
Yes.
So if you own a farm, yeah, you're not maybe it wouldn't work for your people, you and your inheritors to live. But if you could build a small place, granny flat, if you will, then you know, it gives you some place to live while the kids take over. And
that would be, because they're going to only be there. They'll be gone for 4 months out of the year or 5 months out of the year.
Who will be?
Granny, because she's not
going to
stay
here. Granny, she's not farming.
In the winter.
She's going where it's warm.
She's going to
be right. She's going to Florida or California.
If I were running the world, I would limit it to sick or infirm relatives, but that's obviously, I think, the biggest motivating force.
Yeah.
Is aging in place is an issue in the country as well as in town.
I don't think we want to get into regulating, like, who is there, if it has to be a family member or anything like that.
Agreed.
I think that's the property owner's business.
Agreed.
It's a rental. That would be that.
Maybe percentage of the existing home or something like that.
Because I had, when I was growing up, my grandparents had a trailer in the back because they were only here 6 months out of here. My grandparents, I mean, I'm sixth generation, so Grandpa Dick would come, and he needed to be there. He didn't need to be out of a place in Cole, Iowa. He was only there for 6 months. Right, Jerry?
We did it.
Grandpa Dick?
Yeah.
We did it the expensive way. We subdivided a farmstead, and then we built our house, and now I have my mother's house.
Can I make a motion to adjourn?
Before you do, Jerry, we appreciate that comment, Aaron, and we will definitely consider that. Is there any other comments that you want us to consider for the work program for 2019?
I think it feels like we only covered like four things.
No, but we did not cover all of it. But I also think that we're down a couple of members, and we're going to have new members. So I'd rather table that, and let's have that discussion. I know
you're
just
going to
go through it.
We can certainly do that, like in January.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second.
We're adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. Thank you very much.